Using nuclear weapons for our defense is like walking on thin ice. The fact that we got away with it for so many years does not mean we should keep doing it forever.
America has 5,000 nuclear weapons. Where do we get off telling other nations they shouldn't have any?
I can imagine states with rational leaders would say, I want nuclear weapons if my neighbors don't have them. But if my neighbors have them, I may not be better off. Indeed, my program might incite my neighbors.
Do weapons of mass destruction raise moral issues ordinary weapons don't?
The spread of nuclear weapons is something that any regional state has to be interested in.
They're talking about nuclear war. Talking about nuclear war.
Deterrence works, but it's not foolproof.
Our guest is Scott Sagan, co-author of The Spread of Nuclear Weapons, An Enduring Debate.
Weapons of Mass Destruction.
Coming up on Philosophy Talk.
This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
They accept your intelligence. I'm John Perry.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the Marsh Theater, the Bay Area's breeding ground for new performance.
Our thinking originates across the bay at Stanford University. There at Philosopher's Corner, Ken and I practice philosophy.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Today, it's weapons of mass destruction.
Well, Ken, that's a massive topic, but at least, for once, we don't have to search for a definition. We've got one straight from a United Nations commission in 1947. Weapons of mass destruction include atomic explosive weapons, radioactive material weapons, lethal chemical and biological weapons, and any weapons developed in the future which have characteristics comparable in destructive effect to those of the atomic bomb or the other weapons mentioned above.
Well, that's an interesting list of weapons, but I don't see what makes it a definition. It tells us nothing about what nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons have in common. I mean, it can't just be, they're all horrible, but that can't be it. I mean, cancer's horrible, but it's not a weapon of mass destruction. Maybe it's that they're more destructive than any other weapons that we call them weapons of mass destruction, but it doesn't say how destructive.
Well, actually, in 1947, these were not the world's most destructive weapons, at least in terms of the destruction they had already wreaked. The atomic bombs dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima each caused about 75,000 deaths. That was less than the conventional bombing raids on Tokyo or Dresden.
I see your point, but it did only take two atomic bombs to do all that damage. Now, how many bombs were dropped on Dresden, say? Thousands, I would venture?
Yeah, you're getting at a point, but it's you're saying it's a matter of efficiency. But is efficiency, is that morally relevant?
Well, why not? I mean, maybe efficiency is the morally relevant thing. Think of today's hydrogen bombs. They're so darn efficient at killing that one of them dropped at the order of one deranged megalomaniac could just wipe out the entire population of New York City. Now, that's efficient, and that's horrible.
But where does that leave biological and chemical weapons? They're not nearly that destructive.
Yeah, but they are efficient. That's what I think maybe that is what makes them so frightening, especially in an age of terrorism. I mean, a terrorist equipped with the right chemical or biological weapon could kill a lot more people, you have to admit, than he could with a machine gun or with a conventional bomb strapped to his waist.
Well, I'm not totally convinced that the efficient killing makes for the moral difference. Was it really worse for Assad to gas 1,000 people than it would have been to have his soldiers gun them down?
I do see your point. Still, in my gut, John, there's something morally worse about weapons of mass destruction. I agree with you. We haven't quite put our finger on what it is, but there is something morally worse.
Well, even though we're struggling to find the moral difference between weapons of mass destruction and conventional weapons, I think it is important to realize how we got where we are. Go back to 1947. The U.S. at that time was the only nuclear power. We had the opportunity to rid the world forever of these weapons. In all likelihood, if we had disavowed them, that would have been it. I think it's a moral tragedy that we failed to do so.
Okay, John, but let's quit worrying about the past. Think about today's moral quagmire. The world is awash in these weapons. Today, any would-be terrorist can Google how to build a nuclear bomb. Chemical weapons, they're everywhere. Germ warfare is just around the corner, and we're not alone. It's not more 1947. We're not alone in the nuclear club anymore. There are now 9 known nuclear powers.
Well, and if you look how the U.S., the most powerful nation in the world, tiptoes around those nuclear powers, you'd say, well, any rational nation that wants respect better get their hand on some nuclear weapons.
So the question is, what are we going to do about this, John? These things are going to be used, and used on a massive scale someday. And forget about states. Think of the havoc one person with one chemical or biological weapon could spread.
Well, you said it, Ken. We sent our roving philosophical reporter, Caitlin Esch, to find out why chemical and biological weapons strike such fear in our hearts, and should do so. She files this report.
For at least 2,000 years, people have used biological warfare against their enemies. In the 6th century BC, the Assyrian army poisoned its enemy's water supply with rye ergot, a deadly fungus that grows on wheat. In the 1300s, the Tatar army took to hurling corpses infected with the bubonic plague over the walls of cities they were attacking along the Crimean coast. And in the 1700s, it's said that the British Army gave Native Americans blankets and handkerchiefs taken from smallpox hospitals, wiping out whole tribes.
Even back in the day, people understood that if you could make the enemy sick, that would be a good way to weaken them, if not outright kill them.
Margaret Brando from the Stanford School of Engineering models our country's preparedness for hypothetical bioterrorism attacks. She tells of an incident in the 1980s when the followers of an East Indian spiritual leader named Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh in rural Oregon pulled off one of the largest acts of bioterrorism in U.S. history.
They went to a bunch of salad bars at restaurants and contaminated it with salmonella. So many people in the Dalles became sick. This is essentially an act of bioterror.
Brando says there's something incredibly sinister about chemical and biological weapons. They can scare us more than bullets and bombs.
If there's a poison gas floating over your city, lots of people will die. You're not just shooting someone or bombing them in a direct way. You're exterminating large numbers of people. And I think that's inhuman and terrifying.
And bioagents are subtle. If a bomb goes off and you aren't hit directly, you know it, you can try to run. But if helicopters are dispersing odorless sarin gas over your village,
you can't see, smell, or taste what is killing you.
Biological and chemical weapons can wipe out a people without damaging the surrounding environment. And you never know what agents might be used, by what group, when, or where.
These images continue to shock the world. Syrian opposition groups say the videos are evidence the Assad regime used chemical weapons in a Damascus suburb.
Researchers in Wisconsin and the Netherlands, working separately, have created a form of the deadly bird flu virus that can easily spread from person to person.
Remember the envelopes of poison sent to members of Congress and major news organizations just weeks after the World Trade Center attacks?
Anthrax, it turns out, is extremely hard to weaponize.
Again, Margaret Brando.
You've got to be able to separate the spores so that they will basically disperse properly through the air. And that is technically very hard to do.
Brando sits on a committee that considers what kinds of antibiotics, vaccines, and other medicines should be stored in secret locations in our strategic national stockpile.
I believe that we have enough material to fill 7 Walmarts from floor to ceiling, and each year we add about $500 million more to this stockpile.
Brando says it's pretty easy to get semi-automatic weapons, even bombs. To deploy chemical weapons takes real scientific savvy. But still, we try to prepare ourselves for the worst, because as history has shown, if there's a will to do harm with chemical or biological agents, there's always a way. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Caitlin Esch.